This summer, Americans have been taking some unlikely reading to the beach. Four of the top five books on the New York Times hardcover nonfiction bestseller list out today are works of history. David McCullough's John Adams, Stephen Ambrose's The Wild Blue, Hampton Sides' Ghost Soldiers, and Joseph Ellis's Founding Brothers. Brandeis University history professor David Hackett Fisher sees the American public's revived interest in history as being driven by a broad intellectual movement, one that fuses long-standing methods of political history with techniques of social and cultural history imported from Europe in the 1960s. He says McCullough's book in particular is a good example of the new history.
We've been through two generations of history, and what David McCullough has done has been to bring together the strengths of both of them. We had the old political history in the 40s and 50s and early 60s, and that was really about a small elite, white, male, great events. It had rigor, drama, but it was really very narrow. Some of the best of it was very conservative, Samuel Morrison or Allen Nevins. And historians were very restless with that in the 60s and 70s, and they developed the new social history, which transformed it in many ways at once. It made it into a history of ordinary people, all the people, much broader than before. It was women's history and the history of ethnic minorities, and much of it was about the history of structures, cultures, societies, large processes, and it was very deterministic.
By deterministic, you mean everything was sort of preordained, or one big event followed another big event? And
it was, and it drew heavily from sociology, and there was an old saying in academia that economics was about how people made choices, and sociology was about how people had no choices to make. Mm. And it was in that mood that a fair amount of the social history was written, and I think the result of that was that it lost the events in history, and it lost a sense of agency as well, and people stopped reading it. One of the ironies of the new social history was that it aspired to make history much more inclusive. It became much more addressed to other social historians, and its vehicle was the monograph. The old political history had a larger public. Mm-hmm. And what's happening, I think, in David McCullough's book is that the strengths of these two approaches have come together. So that we see a breadth here that's very interesting. Much of this book is about Abigail Adams,
yeah,
who in some ways may be even the strongest figure in the book. Mm-hmm. And it's also about the Adamses as more ordinary people. They're not monumental figures. They work their own farm. John Adams is one of the few signers of the Declaration of Independence who owned no slaves. And there is a sense that they in some way belong to the people. There's also the sense that these leaders of the people were doing extraordinary things. And there is a sense of contingency in this book. People here are making choices, and the choices make a difference in the world.
Are there other historians and other histories that can be seen as examples of this new trend of presenting history besides John Adams?
I think first of James McPherson on the Civil War and Stephen Ambrose in World War II. And both of them are bringing together the breadth and inclusion of the new social history with the sense of contingency and of event that was in the older history. James McPherson is writing about the People's Civil War, why people fought in the war. But he's also really interested in contingency, a word he uses frequently to mean turning points. When the choices that ordinary people were making turned the flow of events. And it's the same with Stephen Ambrose in so many of his books about World War II and other things, about ordinary people doing extraordinary things in World War II. And he gives that event a different texture from what it had before, but it's still very eventful. Mm-hmm. And it's the events and the contingencies that I think create the narrative tension in all of these works. And keep us reading on.
And you subscribe to this as well.
Very much so. I've tried to do the same thing in my books. Paul Revere's Ride is a story of people making choices and choices making a difference. Albion Seed is about small groups founding creating regional cultures which still operate today.
Is this new approach to history guilty of overemphasizing personalities?
That would be the judgment of historians in that second generation. who really want to see much more in the way of structures. But I was interested to see how David McCullough juxtaposed John Adams and Thomas Jefferson, spoke of them as coming from different cultures, even, he said, different countries. And he developed that idea of a cultural context through stories. So the book becomes a narrative that's braided of small stories, and it's those anecdotes which give it a life on the page.
I'm wondering, did the founders ever really fall out of favor? They're certainly in the forefront now, not only with McCullough's book, but also Joseph Ellis's book about the founding brothers.
They've been in and out of favor with a rhythm that goes through much of American history. They were very much in favor just after World War II, and there was a great surge of writing about John Adams. There were other bestsellers, Catherine Drinker Bowen's book about John Adams and the American Revolution. The center of that book was John Adams and the Boston Massacre trial. And it had a great vogue. And there were other works as well. Page Smith did a very graceful biography that was a bestseller in 1962. And then after that, the founders began to fade. There was always a drizzle of dissertations that kept coming through every twist and turn of this. But historical works in general, works of historical scholarship, disappeared from the bestseller list. And we began to get books called The End of History or The Edge of History. And there was a sense that in some way history was not part of us. It was a time when social historians talked about the past as a foreign country, remote from our lives. And in the new work we're getting, there's none of that mood. We have a feeling that we have a connection with the Adamses. There's a feeling of kinship about other generations who walked the earth before we've been here.
Why do you think is America turning to history right now? And do you see it happening elsewhere besides with McCullough's book?
I do. I think it started a few years ago, perhaps in the 1990s. And maybe it was the end of the Cold War. Maybe it was an event that took us so much by surprise. Maybe it was a sense that history was happening to us. Maybe also people were getting a little bit weary of the iconoclastic mood of the 1970s and 80s. So much of this work is about value and about people in whom we can have some confidence in their conduct. And I think that feeds on the events in politics in our own time. But most of all, I think it's a sense that we have more of an agency in our history. In the Cold War, we were encouraged to think about the collision of great systems and processes. And there was a certain inexorability in all of that. Now I think there's a sense of recovery of our own involvement in the historical process. And I think that's pure gain. I think the power of fusion that we're getting from bringing these two things together is one reason why people are reading more and more of the history that people like David McCullough and James McPherson and Stephen Ambrose are writing today.
David Hackett Fisher is a history professor at Brandeis University. He's the author of Paul Revere's Ride and Albion's Seed, Four British Folkways in America. He joined us from WBUR in Boston. Thanks very much.
Thanks for having me. I wish you a happy Labor Day and hope people, if they have a little more time, will take a history book to the beach.